across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, as I'm recording these words, the sun has just appeared, and the grey skies seem to be dissipating. And the sun is absolutely beautiful. It's in my eyes at the moment. But I'm quite happy with that, and it means spring is on the way. Hope everything is okay with you, and thank you very much for all of the ongoing email contacts that I've had from you. And if you're new to the show, let me know that you're there. When you get in touch, tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use this show. Thank you very much, as ever, to Adam, my webmaster, for his work on the website, theunexplained.tv, and also for his sterling work on getting the shows disseminated out to you through various platforms and in various ways, as you will know. Now, the subject on this edition of The Unexplained is, some of you might think, a little out there. But you can't do a show called The Unexplained, I don't think, without embracing the entire gamut of subjects. So we talk about everything from true crimes and why people commit them, to space news, to Bigfoot, whatever we deal with here on this show. And I've always wanted it to be a broad span of topics, so even though I get emails from people saying, why don't you only do ghosts? Or why won't you only talk about Bigfoot? You're not doing enough UFO shows, or you're doing too many UFO shows. I think the important thing about this show, until I know better, is that it has to embrace a lot of things. Otherwise, I think it doesn't have very much credibility. That's my view. And as some of you tell me frequently when I get criticism, it is my show, so I've got to decide what goes on it, if you get what I'm saying. So on this edition, Samuel Chong in California. He's in Los Angeles. He's been on a number of American platforms, including the biggest of those, but I don't think he's ever been on in this country, the UK. So we're going to rectify that now. Samuel is a certified court interpreter and Chinese translator in Los Angeles. Now that part, the translation part of it, is going to become very important here when we get into the story, because essentially, to boil it down, he was instrumental in getting published to the enormous Chinese market a book that talked about a remarkable, if you believe it, story of alien contact and alien guidance in a way. Based on a book written in the late 80s by a man whose name was Michel Desmarquet, and the book was Theoba Prophecy. I'm sure I've mispronounced that, but we'll get that right in a minute. So Samuel Chong has an instrumental part not only in translating this book and getting it to a much wider audience and turning it into a bestseller in that market, but also in going out before the author's death to meet him and to get his further revelations and further information. Now, I think it's a fascinating, remarkable, and highly interesting story. Is it all 100% true? I don't know, and neither do you, to be honest, right? So that's what we're going to do on this edition of The Unexplained. Samuel Chong in Los Angeles. There's an 8-hour time difference between there and here, so that means me doing that at 5 p.m. UK, which is like 9 a.m. in the Pacific time region. So that's what we're about to do. If you want to get in touch with me, as ever, go to my website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the link there, and you can email me from that portal. And if you've made a donation to The Unexplained recently, thank you very much. You know that everything I do is a shoestring operation. And, you know, every penny that comes in is utterly vital. So thank you very, very much. Okay, let's get to Los Angeles now. Samuel Chong is there. Samuel, thank you for coming on my show.
Thank you for having me here.
Samuel, having listened to a couple of interviews that you've done and having read about you, you sound to me like a man who is driven by a task that you feel that you have to complete. Am I being fair when I say that?
It is fair, because I like to change the course of the future.
That's a big thing. A lot of people have tried to do that in the past, and they have failed. But you think you have a big message for us?
Yes, because I think we are at a critical moment of time that if we don't change our ways, we are going to be heading a catastrophe.
Well, I think there are going to be a lot of people in this world, including me, who might well believe and agree with what you're saying, Samuel. You know, we have multiple problems in multiple ways, and a lot of people say we seem to be reaching some kind of tipping point. Now, the story that we're about to spell out here, and we've got to assume that we're speaking with somebody, I'm talking about my listener here, who knows nothing about this, is an extraordinary story. And it's an extraordinary story that has you at the apex, the center of it, because without you, a lot of people would not have heard this story. So I wonder if we can begin to unpick it. First of all, tell me about you. Tell me about Samuel Chang.
Well, I was born in Beijing, China in 1978. I came to the United States at the age of 15 in 1993. And I went to college, UC Berkeley, London School of Economics, a university in Spain, and studied economics, economic history, and financial analysis. And then I worked as a paralegal and then as a certified court interpreter at a Chinese translator here in Los Angeles, mainly dealing with attorneys and doctors and also the court people, the people who work in the court system. So, but I have a fascination in space since I was young. Mm-hmm. And after I found out about this book, I decided to dedicate a lot of my time into spreading the messages contained in the book, because I think they're very important.
It's a very unusual field for a man who, you know, is as accomplished and academically grounded as you are. It's a very unusual thing for a person to be involved in, but you're clearly very committed to it.
Yes, very much, because, you know, if you read a book, if you know the messages contained in the book, I think we need to act on it.
Okay, now this is the story, then, of a man called Michel Demarquez, or De Marquette. And the book is called The Theuba Prophecy. And this book apparently was out in English in 1987. And I have to say, I was in this world in 1987. And maybe I'm remiss. I don't remember it.
Well, the book really was a self-published book in Australia. It hasn't really gotten a lot of attention in the United States or United Kingdom, for that matter, until fairly recently, until I spoke about it publicly. And this book is really kind of a book ahead of its time, because it talks about a lot of the paranormal, the mysteries in the world, and also important messages that may really cause a lot of issues with these special interest groups that are really doing a lot of things behind the scenes.
All right. This is about a man who you subsequently came to meet, and we'll explain why and how you came to meet him. As we say, his name is Michel Demarquez, and he wrote a book about an experience that he had, or would like us to believe that he had, whereby he was effectively abducted by aliens. And it's a big story. Not even his wife believed him.
That's correct. Until this day, his wife still thinks that he was having an affair with another woman when he was gone for about 10 days or so.
Okay. So how did he... There are, in ufology, as you will know, because we have both studied these things, there are a million stories, some of them more famous than others, of people being abducted. Betty and Barney Hill at the beginning, people like Travis Walton, Calvin Parker, all very famous stories in the pantheon of ufology. What happened to Michel?
Well, Michel Demarquez was taken away by this group of beautiful, compassionate ETs to their planet for 9 days and then came back. He was told a lot of interesting information about the history of Earth, where we came from, the reasons for the building or construction of the Great Pyramid of Egypt, what happens in the Bermuda Triangle, and what about the human energy field, and also the stories in the Bible. And this book contains a lot of detailed, specific, verifiable information that people can look up to and explore further. More importantly, I think this book gives so much information that we can relate in our real day life, even nowadays, that we can really act upon the information or suggestions given by our friendly ET friends.
And we have to say that, you know, this is not a story of the evil greys. This is a story of an 8-foot tall, 9-foot tall, benevolent race of aliens who pick this man, as you say, take him away for 9 days and imbue him with a lot of knowledge about things that are mysteries to us. Why and how did they pick him?
Well, he was told that he himself had 80 past lives before, and only people like him can survive for about 9 days on their planet because of the probably different vibrations or different issues that we don't know about. Other people like me, who may have a lesser number of past lives, wouldn't have been able to survive for about 9 days on their planet. So that's why they chose him to spend the most or the maximum number of days on their planet, so that he was able to observe and get informed about certain aspects of life and also the things that happen on Earth. Also, he was told that he was a man of action, which I agree, because he took immediate actions after being instructed to do certain things. And his main mission was to write a book detailing what he personally experienced and observed. And I think there's a third reason, is that he was just a landscaper, a farmer in Australia. He didn't have any preconceived notions. He didn't have any presuppositions. A journalist or a ufologist, on the other hand, if taken away by the ETs, wouldn't be as more kind of straightforward to detailing or documenting his accounts. In other words, Michel Demarquet was just a blank piece of paper to write on. He would objectively write what he observed.
Did he go missing for 9 days that his wife would observe? In other words, was it the same amount of time here as it was in this place he said he went to?
Yes, his wife, his son, his all agree that all observe that he went missing for 10 days for sure.
Right. Well, I suppose, you know, if I was a suspicious person, you know, I might say, well, if I disappeared for 9 days, I better have a pretty convincing cover story to explain why I was away. And, you know, a long absence like that, well, you might say, well, you may not believe this, but I was abducted by aliens. There would have been a lot of people who would not have believed him.
Right, but that's the truth, what happened to him, according to Michel Demarquet. And if you read the book, if people read the book, they're going to understand that it wouldn't be possible for a person like Michel Demarquet to write so many details with such information. Because remember, back in the 1980s, there was no internet. And Michel Demarquet didn't know how to type. He didn't know how to use a computer. Until his death, he dictated what he had to write to me through his Vietnamese niece. So he was a man who didn't have a lot of education, but the book contains so many details that people are really amazed. For example, I was amazed that the book mentioned about the tomb of Jesus Christ in Shingo Village, Japan, that people can look it up on the internet nowadays. But back then, when Michel Demarquet was just a farmer in Australia who never visited Japan in his entire life, wrote about it in such a detail, I wouldn't think that he just imagined it I just don't think that he had the imagination.
Well,
to do
as you say, there's a lot of detail, there's technical detail, and there are other things that we're only beginning to talk about in science now. I agree with you there in this book. Where is this planet?
Well, the planet is in our galaxy, the Milky Galaxy, and it's multiple light years far away from us, and indeed they traveled at a speed a few times faster than the speed of light.
I mean, can we observe it?
Well, I don't think we can observe it, because we can only see the stars in their solar system. We cannot see the planet, because from that planet, Michel Demarquet wasn't able to see Earth. He was able to see the sun, our sun, but he wasn't able to see the planets rotating the sun.
And the occupants, the residents of this planet, clearly have the ability to travel around the cosmos. Have they been observing us?
Yes, throughout history, as documented in the stories in the Bible, for example, they have been instrumental in the destruction of the two cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, and they helped Moses leading the Hebrews out of Egypt, parting the Sea of Reeds, going to Canaan, and they also was responsible for the birth of Jesus and Christ. So there are actually two beings for that, one Jesus, one Christ. And they're also involved in what happened during World War II, preventing Germany from being the first country to develop the atomic bomb. There are so many details in the book that really shocked me.
Now, you say that they intervened at various points, but many things have happened in this world that I think they maybe could have intervened in. And you say that they're benevolent and they're nice. They could have helped us out a hell of a lot more, couldn't they?
Yes, that's true, because they are really helping us by not helping us, because remember, if you want to teach your child a mathematical problem, the child would learn it better if he or she finds a solution on his or her own. If the parent just gives an answer directly to the child, then the child wouldn't be able to learn much. So this is why I think we are having a very good experience through life by responding to different challenges that we all face. And this way we can gain a lot of spiritual lessons.
Right.
So life is a progress of constant learning process.
In other words, as many people say, including me, you know, why are all these bad things happening to me in my life? It's part of a learning process. And I think, you know, a lot of religions and thinkers say that sort of thing too. So it's interesting that they have the same view. Now, back to Michel, and I will get to the way that you met him and how you interacted with him in a little while. But back to Michel and his abduction experience. In his book, in his original 1980s book, what does he say about this place and going there, the experience of being there?
Well, before he landed on the planet, he saw a golden mist surrounding the planet Theuba. It's a very beautiful planet with a lot of colors in it, in addition to the color gold. So he really had to wear facial masks, like sunglasses, to filter out the colors and also the lights on the planet. And he saw a lot of very beautiful plants and animals, that some of which we see on Earth, some of which are not on Earth. And people there are highly spiritual and highly compassionate. They are able to perform all the miracles as performed by Jesus, as written in the Bible. They can levitate. They can communicate through telepathy. They can heal different injuries. They can also resurrect the dead. So they can do a lot of different things. And Michel de Marquet enjoyed his entire stay on the planet, in addition to receiving a lot of knowledge, which would be extremely useful for all of us here. He didn't really want to come back. He didn't know he was coming back. When he came back, didn't want to stay on Earth anymore. He wanted the Tau or the ETs to take him away, take him back to Theuba. So this is how he felt, and he actually had a major depression after he came back. He didn't want to spend more days on Earth, but he knew he had to, because suicide is strictly forbidden by universal law. And there, he was informed a lot of different mysteries on Earth, such as ancient civilizations like Atlantis and Lemuria. He was shown his past 80 lives very briefly, and he also visited what happened in the past 14,500 years ago, when the continent of Lemuria sunk into the ocean. So a lot of interesting things happened when he was there.
It sounds like, absolutely. The hardest thing, if you believe that you've been through something like that, is to, first of all, tell the people closest to you. And if you've had a 9-day absence, you're going to have to tell them something. But to tell other people about it. And I think, if I've got this right, and this was from one of the interviews that you've given, you said that he was hurt, almost, and depressed by the ridicule.
Yes, exactly. When he came back, his wife didn't believe him. That caused his divorce. The ufologists at his time didn't believe him because they were into like reptilians and also the other interesting or kind of suggestions. And a lot of his close friends didn't believe him. But some people believed him. He just had a group of followers at that time. At the suggestion of his friends, he moved to Vietnam just to quiet down and to live a rather kind of a life that's far away from the controversies.
Mm. And maybe more contemplative. So this made a fundamental change to actually quite, from what you say, quite an ordinary man.
Yes, he actually said that you don't know those people. They destroyed my life in a very unique way, because otherwise he would have been just a regular farmer or a landscaper in Australia, living his ordinary life.
And what would you say to anybody who might be hearing this now? Because it is an incredible story. But then, you know, the world is full of incredible stories. And, you know, who am I? Who is anybody to say that this is not so? But there will be people hearing this who think this sounds like one huge hoax.
A lot of people do think so, and I just would like people to open their mind and to take a look at the book, because a book written in the late 1980s wrote about the ET bases on the far side of the moon, alien life or life on Mars, which is now a dead planet. And also he wrote about the stories in the Bible. You know, when I was reading the book, I thought it was just another book about ET contactees. I mean, it could be true, it could be false. But then when I read the book on the chapter, Who is Christ? It really shocked me. I didn't believe anything in the Bible. Before I read this book, I thought Jesus was just a fictional character who people imagined performing all the miracles just to preach the doctrines of the religious organizations. But then after I read this book, it really connects all the dots in the stories in the Bible. For example, there's no record of Jesus performing any miracles before the age of 28. I mean, at least not in the Bible. Why is that the case? And why there's a tomb of Jesus Christ in Shingo Village, Japan? And I looked it up. In Shingo Village, Japan, and people can search on the internet, there's a tomb of Jesus Christ. I mean, Japan is so far away from Bethlehem or from Israel. Why would there be a tomb over there? A different culture and people speak different languages over there. And why some people say that Jesus went to India, and it really doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I looked it up, and this the explanation given in this book really answered all my questions about organized religions, about Jesus Christ, about Moses, and about Sodom and Gomorrah.
What was happening in my country at that time? Were there any indications? Has he been given any indications as to what was happening in Europe, and you know how our formation came about? You know, I suppose what I'm asking in a very roundabout way is: are there things about the development of the United Kingdom and of Europe that perhaps have something to do with this race of extraterrestrials?
Yes, we all came from different planets. The black people and the yellow people came from a planet called Bacaratini about 1.35 million years ago. And the Caucasians came from a different planet. And they first landed on the continent of Atlantis. Atlantis at that time was actually connected to Europe. And people there was under the rules of people on Lemuria. So, and then some of the people didn't really like being colonized by the Lemurians, so they moved to other parts of the world. For example, some of them went to Europe. And indeed, you know, the current day Greek letters, they actually were originally from Atlantis. And in a sense that If you study ancient Greece, there are a lot of information about the continent of Atlantis and their civilization. So in a sense, the Caucasian people moved from Atlantis to Europe, and the Jewish people came last about 12,000 years ago from the planet Hebra.
Okay, now, if that is the case, if we all of our many varied, richly diverse races, if we all came from different planets originally, how come in terms of our composition and in terms of, you know, the nuts and bolts of our bodies, we are the same? If you cut us, we bleed, whatever we are, whoever we are.
We are all created by God. So when God created every one of us, it really kind of molded us in a very similar way. And the most important thing is that it inserted a tiny portion of itself into each one of us. And we adapt to the different environments on different planets. If we were on a different planet, then we would look a little bit differently from each other, mm-hmm. or maybe from the people on Earth. So it really due to the environments on the planet that we live on. So on Earth, we all have very similar environments, so to speak. So we all look alike. So when we reincarnate, we are born into the physical bodies that's most adaptable to the local environments of the planet.
I want to take you back to what they told him about the bases on the moon. And if you go on, I'm talking to my listener here, if you go onto the internet and you look, you know, for research notes and pictures of claimed bases on the moon, the far side, then there is a lot of talk about that. And in fact, there's a lot of talk about that right now, that when we return to the moon, when the Artemis missions return to the moon, there might be some discoveries there. And there are claims that maybe the likes of NASA know that that's the case. What was Michel told about what is on the far side of the moon?
Yes, he was told exactly how that came about. About 250,000 years ago, there was another group of ETs from the planet Arimo X3. Because of overpopulation, they wanted to migrate some of their people onto a different planet. They were exploring the different planets in our solar system, and they found us, people on Earth. So they were going to migrate their people to the continent of Lemuria when that continent existed on Earth, which sunk down after a few thousand years. And there they encountered a small group of Chinese people in the northwestern corner of the continent. So they had a small war. Being highly spiritual, highly advanced, they really didn't want to fight against the Chinese people over there. I'm a Chinese. I know that Chinese people are really suspicious. They are. I can testify on that. They're really suspicious about foreign people or foreigners. So they wanted to use the moon, which existed at that time, to as a transfer station so that they can migrate. They could migrate their people step by step, but in different phases. So that's why they built a base or moon bases, just to transfer their raw materials and also their people from their planet to Earth. And they did so. So they established an ancient civilization called Mu or Lemuria. And that's the whole reason about the existence of ET bases on the far side of the moon.
Well, we'll be able to verify that quite soon, won't we?
Yes, definitely. And by the way, I don't know if you or your listeners have been wondered about the reason why NASA hasn't gone back to the moon in about 50 years or so.
Well, there's a lot of speculation, and some people say it's because of what they discovered the first time round.
Yes, they did encounter certain things, and basically, in short, we were warned off from the moon. The astronauts saw ETs on the moon, and which were not reported back to the general population, and then they were told that they were not ready to explore the universe or solar system because we are still fighting against ourselves. They only allow people who are ready, like people who are highly spiritually advanced to explore the universe, because they wouldn't want to cause a lot of disruptions or warfares
in the universe. Isn't it? Because we're reaching further and further out and we're going back to the moon. Now, on that premise, that would indicate that we are ready. But of course, we've got wars everywhere here and tension in all kinds of places. We've got a war going on in Ukraine. There are conflicts in Africa. And yet, do they deem that we're now ready to know the secrets that are there to be discovered on the moon?
We are not ready yet. In my mind, I think when they try to send a manned mission to the moon, it's not going to succeed. They're going to find other excuses to delay the mission. We can send an unmanned mission to different planets because we are not allowed to really explore the solar system or the universe in person with manned astronauts. And this is actually told by Michel Demarquet. And he said Tao and the ETs who he encountered told him straight face that we are not ready or not allowed to contaminate the universe.
And yet, we're exploring Mars. Only a week or two ago, they discovered what looked like a riverbed. There was evidence of waves. We're getting closer and closer to perhaps discovering that there either is or has been life on Mars. So we're reaching out that far. Is that because we're being permitted to do that?
Right. We are permitted to do that, but not with an astronaut, not with people on the spacecraft. So we can send like spaceships over there as long as there are no people on the spaceship. So it also raises an interesting point that about 1.35 million years ago, there were life forms on Mars. There were people on Mars, and the people there were highly spiritual, but they didn't have a lot of technology. But then Mars as a planet cooled down from its core. So when planet's core cools down, it loses the electromagnetic force that captures the atmosphere. So when that happens, life forms die out on Mars.
And that's why Mars is in the condition that it's in.
That's correct. So I would suggest Elon Musk to rethink about his mission of sending people on Mars.
And it's interesting how I think his schedule has been pushed back and back and back. What was Michel told about what we might discover if we go digging, which we are, and if we go probing on Mars, and if we even go flying our little helicopter on Mars? What was he told about what might be there for us to see?
Well, he was told that there were different plants and animals on Mars, and there were also people who lived like highly spiritual people who lived in a very primitive way, and we would find out or traces of evidence that life really existed on Mars, but they all disappeared because Mars is actually a dead planet now. And he told me personally that the Martians, the people on Mars, some of which moved to Tibet. And I found that to be interesting because the Tibetans are really different from the Chinese people. You know, the Chinese people are really materialistic and really want to earn a lot of money. And they try to tell the Tibetans to do the same thing. But the Tibetans insisted on living a very spiritual life. And they have a very unique custom. People who are dead are not, their corpse are not supposed to be touched for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. And this is why Jesus resurrected 3 days after he was nailed on the cross.
Okay, Samuel, I mean, look, this is going to be a lot for people to take in, but it's not the first time on this show or other expositions like this that people have heard stories that are pretty big. This is a big story. Now, you come into this story, don't you, at the point where Michel wants to get his book to a broader market, wants to be able to translate it into Chinese languages, and needs somebody to help him do that. How did he find you?
Well, it's not that he found me. I found him. I tracked him down. Yes. I was so into this book and fascinated by the content and the details that I also read a postscript. And in the postscript, he says that there are more incredible things that he was not allowed to write about because we were far from understanding them. And that really made me a little bit upset because the book is already incredible enough and he didn't reveal everything he knew. And that caused me a lot of curiosity or issues. I really wanted to know everything that he knew. So I tracked him down on the internet and found him that he was living in Vietnam. I didn't know exactly where he was living. I only knew like some tourist posted like a photo of his bungalow on the internet. So I flew to where he was living and then showed a picture of his bungalow to a local taxi driver. And the taxi driver took me there.
Wow. And apparently, he says that he was tipped off that you were coming.
Yes, that's on the third day after my arrival. And he said to me that Tao sent him a telepathic message and saying that someone like me was going to come and visit him. You know, I was very curious what else the ETs told him about me, being very curious about my future. And then he didn't elaborate, unfortunately. And here I am, just trying to promote his messages.
And the principal reason, you know, apart from wanting to translate this man's work, which you did, and apparently the book has become a bestseller in China and Taiwan, I understand, you were fascinated and driven by the desire to know what it is that he hasn't told us. Did he tell you?
Yes, he told me on my second trip to Vietnam. He wrote an email to me saying that he was allowed to share that message to me only on the condition that I visit him personally, in person. And later on, I learned that the reason was that he didn't want to go through his knees and type out a message to me because he didn't know how to type. So he told the message to me personally, and that's actually the reason why I'm becoming more publicly and sharing the messages to the people in the world. That's the whole motivation. It's the one message, one information he didn't write in the book.
So what is it that we need to know?
We need to know that the future depends on our actions. The past is fixed. And we can change our future. Just read the Bible, read the book of Enoch, and read the Bible, the I wouldn't say the Revelation, but the New Testament, the four Gospels, and to see what it's like towards the end of the world, or maybe towards the second coming of Christ. So I wrote an article about the second coming of Christ, and people who are interested in the message can read the article and can get a sense of what we need to do to prepare that in case that happens.
Do you believe that he knew, they knew,
yes,
and now you
yes.
know when this will be?
Yes.
When is it?
I'm not allowed to talk about the exact date. According to this book, the dangers on earth in ranks of order, the first being money, the second being politicians, and the third, journalists and drugs, and fourth, religions. So everything revolves money, and money is the root of all evils. And if you look at everything that happens around us, and the big pharma and the big oil companies, they have to protect the interests of their shareholders. So if I'm the shareholder of a big pharmaceutical company, I wouldn't want cheap and effective medications to be promoted because I would want to sell my products and no matter how expensive they are. And if I'm a shareholder of a big oil company, I wouldn't want the clean technologies that are cheap and also good for the environment to be promoted, because I want to continue to sell my oil. And the government also wants a tax income as well from the oil companies or the sales of the oil.
So the message from the occupants of the planet through Michel, the one that he hadn't put in the original book, is that we have to be aware of the power, the corruptive power, the deceptive power of money. I mean, a lot of people who are not going to give you any kind of argument about that.
That's right. But there's more to it. We have to have the knowledge. That's the condition. That's the precondition. And we have to act on it. That's the most important part. And we can really follow the footsteps of Gandhi in India to use nonviolent resistance to rise up against tyranny. Because the power of the people is really, really something we should focus on. Through concerted actions, we can change the future. We can change the world for the better. And it really doesn't make sense that some people say, oh, I'm just a person. I don't have enough say about changing the world. You do have the power. If you unite with other people, if you form a concerted action and act together, we are going to change the world, because the whole system relies on people like us to be enslaved, so that the rich and the wealthy can benefit.
Well, of course, I'm not here to argue on their behalf, nor would I do that. But I guess if they were here and they wanted to participate in this, they would say, well, look at the benefits that those money-making ventures have brought to us. We've got a lot of great health advances, and we've got transportation, and the ordinary people are living much better lives than people, you know, who lived in the United Kingdom in mud huts thousands of years ago. That, you know, this is what's fueled where we're at today. But you're saying that the ultimate end to all of this, according to the messages given through Michel, is that we're going to destroy ourselves?
Yes, if we go down this path, we are going to destroy ourselves, because we are getting more and more materialistic. What you just said is just the propaganda or doctrines by the special interest group that really want people to believe in this narrative. Are we really living better than 100 years ago? I mean, with all the pollution and all the control of the...
Well, I mean, look, we can debate that one round a lot, can't we? Probably you would be alive. At my age, I may well, 100 years ago, I might not have been alive. We're living longer.
Well, the meaning of life is actually to learn lessons and to learn spiritual lessons. And if we are very materialistic, we are going to compare ourselves with other people. And that's going to cause a lot of psychological issues, such as bring up hatred or jealousy. Jealousy turns to hatred very easily. So through hatred, we are just going to launch wars against each other. And that's the danger of materialism. This book emphasized the importance of spirituality. Materialism will result in a lot of issues such as wars in the future. And we should focus on spiritual growth, that exactly what Jesus told us 2,000 years ago.
Why did they choose to give the message to this man? I know that he qualified because he'd been reincarnated more times, and that apparently gives you more of an ability to travel to their planet, apparently. But why don't they make this more obvious? You know, why don't they send me an email or ask to come on my show or ask to go on a bigger show than this and tell the people you're doing it all wrong and it's time that you changed your ways and you're going to be a lot happier? Why don't they? I mean, this is not a flippant question. Why don't they do it more directly than doing it through roundabout circuitous methods and getting books translated and dealing through a man who, I mean, we haven't said, but Michelle died in 2018, living in Vietnam. I mean, why do it that way? Why not be more open about it and tell us?
You know, if they tell people like you the truth, you wouldn't be able to promote the messages.
I'll pass it right along. If they come and tell me the truth, I'll go out there. You know, I'll quit any work that I've got, and I'll do it. And I'm asking them, if they want to come and tell me, then I am here. I have nothing to lose. But they don't.
But you wouldn't be able to have access to the platform like BBC anymore, because you would have to do that on your own.
Well, we don't... You know, I started this as a podcast 17 years ago. I've worked for the BBC. I don't work for the BBC now. I don't need, apart from those who supply internet services to get me out there, I don't need, if I don't want to do that, I don't need mainstream media. So I would be very happy for them to use a more direct route to communicate with me, or let's leave me out of it. I'm probably a bad channel. I'm not clever enough. Pick somebody else and let's get it out there.
Well, I think they wanted a person like Michel de Marquet, who is a blank piece of paper, mm-hmm. so that they can really write down the things that they really want us to know. And I think they're especially cynical about journalists per se, not to, with all due respect.
Well, no, listen, I don't blame them at all for that.
I mean, Michel de Marquet was really like a person who is a man of action, but also he's a person that absorbs everything and really stubborn about keeping everything to the letter. And I think there's a reason that they chose him, was that he was able to write everything very honestly and to get a book published in Australia through his publishing company. Mm-hmm. And also there'll be someone else to, like you and like me, to do the other parts of the job, which is to promote the messages. And this is why that I contacted you and seeking for your help. You know, I'm not articulate as Dr. Stephen Greer. I'm not articulate as Dr. Anthony Fauci, but I'm trying. I mean, I speak Chinese. I can do Chinese better, but I need the help from native English speakers like you.
And well, no, I think you've made a very clear set of points here. I mean, one thing we didn't talk about, we talked about this race of people believing that we're sowing the seeds of our own problems in the future, and maybe we need to make some changes about, you know, money and all of those sorts of things and its influence. One of the things I believe they were very keen to impress on Michelle is that our ability, and more people are coming to believe this, to change things by thinking them different. In other words, if you see a different reality, the way things work is you're going to ultimately get that. And if enough people think that way, that's precisely what's going to happen.
Exactly. Through collective consciousness, we are going to change the future. If we all think that the future is going to be great, if we act in a certain way, the future will be great. It's just like what the consciousness can change what the future is like. I believe the Earth and the universe is holographic form. I really do believe that Michael Talbot, who wrote the book Holographic Universe, is right about what the universe is like. Through our mind, through our kind of consciousness, we can really change not only Earth, but also the entire universe. I mean, this is also mentioned in the book. When atomic bomb explodes on Earth, it's felt not only on Earth, but also in all parts of the universe. They know that would happen. They know what happened. So if we think about a very beautiful future in which people live harmoniously, and I think not only Earth is going to have a great future, and it can really affect the entire universe.
Is this life we lead real?
It's real for sure. I mean, we have our physical bodies, but on the other hand, we also have our astral bodies, which when we die, we are going to know everything we did in our lifetime through the life reveal process.
Right, so that is part of this.
Yes, that's part of it.
What about
we have different bodies.
Parallel universes. And science is talking about that now. It wouldn't have talked about it 40, 50 years ago, but it is talking about it now. Did they have a message for us about parallel universes?
Well, the message is that parallel universe exists and it's a natural phenomenon. So people and ships and planes go missing in places like the Bermuda Triangle and also in different locations in national parks in the U.S. as documented by David Pilatus.
Yes.
It's just a natural phenomenon. I mean, people, if they use surveillance or satellite surveillance just to track the electromagnetic anomalies, I think they're able to find out where exactly the portals are or the entry points are. I mean, so people can just avoid those places and to prevent from entering into this parallel universe. And Michel de Marquet actually describes what is inside of a parallel universe. It's a very interesting place to be. I wouldn't want to be there.
We didn't talk, and we should have done at the beginning, and that's my fault, specifically about these 8 or 9 foot tall beings. What form do they take? And as far as Michel recounted it, what are they able to do? I mean, can they leap tall buildings at a single bound? Can they communicate by telepathy? What are their characteristics?
Well, the ETs on Theoba, they're really beautiful. They're Nordic looking, like blonde, compassionate and loving and 9 foot tall. They're hermaphrodites, meaning that they have male and female sexual organs on their body. They have tremendous strength and psychic powers. So they can levitate, they can project what Michel de Marquet can see or imagine. So in a sense, they can do a lot of mind control. They say that it's pretty easy to do to cause people to have this kind of illusions, in which they showed to Michel de Marquet how that was done. And they can also make themselves disappear. They can also shrink their bodies into our size. And they actually can materialize different objects as well, and they have all the knowledge to do the things that we consider as magic or miracles.
By the sounds of it, they don't need UFOs to travel here. Do they use spaceships, UFOs, craft?
Yes, they did. They have a spherical UFO that's about 100 meters in diameter, and they traveled they can travel a few times faster than speed of light, and they actually traveled using this method. They first go into deep space at a speed a few times faster than speed of light. And then once they're in deep space, they use what they call transubstantiation, or what I would call teleportation, to immediately move themselves to another location in deep space. And then from that location in deep space, they travel again a few times faster than speed of light to their destination. And they are masters of all the different kinds of technologies. And they say vibrations are the key to everything, frequency and vibrations. And we should also incorporate different vibrations in our life, like using colors and sound and things like that.
There's a lot of truth in Star Trek. Gene Roddenberry was way ahead of his time, I think. A lot of things that have appeared on that show have come to pass in the decades that succeeded the transmission of the show. There's a thing on Star Trek called the Prime Directive. That is that you do not interfere with the development of the species that you discover or you interact with. Now, according to the account from Michelle, there have been occasions when they have stopped us doing things that would have been deleterious to us. But sometimes they've let things go ahead because it's part of our development. You've got to go through bad stuff in order to get to a better place. What's their position on all of this? Do they have any kind of directive?
Yes, they do. And this is a very interesting point. I think a lot of wars happen, like the World War One, World War Two. It's just part of a development, and they don't tend to intervene unless they have to. When they intervene, it is for our spiritual growth. For example, when they intervened in the past, the two cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, it's not just about sodomy, it's about a lot of other things. The people in the two cities punished the people who did good things unto the poor or unto others. So they couldn't really find a single good person in the two cities. So that's why they distracted the two cities, because they were contaminating the morals of people in contact with them. And imagine, like, I would use analogy. If you have a malignant tumor or a cancer tumor in your body, that's going to spread around to other parts of your body, would you want to keep the tumor cell or tumor, or would you want to take it out? This is exactly what they did. They didn't want the two people, I mean, the cities of the people in the two cities, to really cause a moral decay to the rest of the people in the world. So that's why they intervened. They
Well,
also let,
on that
yeah.
premise, though, sorry, I'm jumping in here. Adolf Hitler was the greatest malignancy of our times. They could have taken him out very quickly, couldn't they? But they didn't.
They didn't, because the United States was doing its job by helping the Allies to win the war. But they did help the United States by preventing Germany from being the first country to develop the atomic bomb. And I did some research. There was a German scientist called Heisenberg. Dr. Heisenberg was on the verge of developing the bomb, but somehow he made a very stupid mistake, considered by other scientists as so stupid that he shouldn't have made that mistake, by making Hitler to think that extraordinary amount of raw materials would be needed to build a bomb. And Hitler gave up the plan, and that caused the US to be ahead of Germany in deploying the bomb
But
in
of course,
Japan.
the human race ended up with the atomic bomb, and we've all lived under, well, depends on how you look at it. We all live in peace because of it, or we all live in fear because of it. You choose your side of the argument. I think this is all fascinating. What were Michelle's last words, just finally, what were Michelle's last words to you? Can you recall them?
Well, I didn't know that he was going to pass away when I met him the second time. I thought he would live until the age of 95 or 105. I was thinking of visiting him for the third time. So he didn't really have his last word to me. But from the postscript, I would advise people to focus on the part in which he was really kind of accusing the readers of not acting enough, not putting things in action enough. I would say he would suggest anyone who reads the book to have the knowledge and then act upon it. It's through nonviolent resistance that's going to change everything down the road.
Of course, the biggest thing, if this is all so, is to get people to believe this. And you know that there will have been people hearing this who think that this is, it's a hell of a story, but a story it is. It's not actually true. The biggest difficulty that Michelle would have and you have is actually getting this message through and getting people to believe that there might be a grain of truth in it.
Yes. I do want to mention one more point, is that there are a lot of books or information claimed by people who have contacts to the ETs. This book is a little bit different in the sense that it has a lot of information that we can relate to in our current day life, modern day life. It also gives advice to us to a concrete advice, specific advice, how to do it using examples and parables and things like that. So I think this book is probably more significant than the other books at least I have read so far, including the Bible.
This is the Theuba prophecy, and can you still buy that in English?
Yes, it's on Amazon, and people can just do a
Okay.
search.
Last question, Samuel, and thank you. I know I've had to ask a few hard questions here, and I apologize for that. You've been very graceful about handling all of those questions. Do you wish that they would come and visit you?
No, because I'm a person of an independent mind, because I would learn much better if I find solutions or answers on my own. That's the reason why, because I really want to get most out of my life.
Right. So, like, you want to be like most of us and go through life's journey and experience the fun and the knocks and the setbacks.
Yes, the setbacks
'Cause
too.
they tell me that's how you learn. Well, I'm still learning. It sounds like you are too, Samuel. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Samuel Chong on The Unexplained. What a story. What do you think? You can contact me in the usual ways, and thank you very much indeed if you already have. My name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online, and please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.